On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 108, Bay Leaves, Cannibals, Grape Harvest, and Doug. All of this and more!
The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose.
Welcome to the Flatus Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. That's delicious. I'm Kenty, your host. Jose, my co-host, is sleeping. I'm sure he's dreaming of you, feeding him a biscuit. Jose, poor little Jose. Well, it's fall, and, I went back. This weekend is the weekend that I harvest the grapes, normally. But this year, while I was at the gym working out, Johnny, my partner, he harvested the grapes. I already talked about this a little bit later. I just wanted to give him double extra credit for that. So thank you so much. But anyway, fall is in the air, and that's what this episode is all about. The jelly and the fall and all sorts of things fall-related. You can reach me at 206-984-3617. Call me and leave a voice comment. You can also email me at flatusshow@gmail.com. And you can send me your voice comments there if you like, if you know how to record your voice. That's always wonderful. Let's see, I want to... I just burped. Sorry about that. At least I'm honest. I'm an honest podcaster. It might not always be pleasant to listen to, but I'm honest. Okay, so anyway, couple listeners, new listeners, actually. Mikal, she's been listening for a while. I hope she's still listening. Mikal, are you still listening? Please tell me you are. Anyway, listen, Pure Imagination. I still have not been able to find the chords for Pure Imagination. So, honey... If you're looking around the internet and you can find the chords for Pure Imagination, or let me know like where it's available in a collection of songs or something that I can buy. You know, if it's under, you know, let's say $15, that would be wonderful. I've been looking, I can't find it, so, you know, maybe I could use your help, and I'll do the song, you know. Let's say here. The second new listener, and Mikhail, I love you for being a listener, okay? I love all my listeners, okay? Let's all have a group hug, okay? Another new listener, Richard from Annapolis. I mean, that's Maryland. I think that's Maryland. He came to the rescue and wrote a review for me at iTunes. His review name is Ace and Chips. Ace and Chip. I think that's what I wrote it down quickly here. I'm not looking at the email. But they are Chihuahuas. I'm assuming his Chihuahuas. So Jose likes that the dogs are being used. So Jose would love Ace and Chip, I'm sure. Probably he would ignore them because Jose is the equivalent of being like a 98-year-old curmudgeon, basically. But he's pretty spry, Jose, for his age. I mean, he's sleeping now, but for the most part, he's pretty spry for a 14-year-old. You know, in real years, in dog years, he's 98. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you, new listeners. It's been wonderful. It's nice to have new listeners. I know I've seen a spike in my subscription levels, so I appreciate that. I don't know if it's the 27th or 28th, whatever that Saturday is in October, I'm going to go to the PodCamp Boston, and I'm going to see a bunch of people there. Hopefully I'll learn a few things, and I'll be able to, you know... whatever they call that, network. I got some cards from Vistaprint online. Now, Vistaprint, reason why I went there originally is they say you can get free business cards. So they had the free business cards. And then I added on some things, so I ended up paying for my cards. Because I wanted some extra perks and everything. But let me tell you about Vistaprint. I'm not recommending Vistaprint yet, though Johnny got cards too. We did it the same day. He got his cards already. I didn't get mine. because I ordered magnets as well, because I'm going to give them out at the PodCamp Boston. Johnny got his cards. But anyway, Vistaprint, they trick you into signing up for things you don't want. There was this thing. It said, click here if you want to save $10. But you have to sign up for this thing, apparently, that they'll take out $14 from your checking, your credit card each month for some crap. Well, I mean, I didn't even know I signed up for it. And I get this thing saying about I'm signed up for it. I was like, what the hell is this? So I went and, you know, ended that thing, that thing they didn't want me, that they signed me up for, which I didn't want, right? That made me upset. So the product seems pretty good, okay? The cards look good and everything from what Johnny has. I'll let you know when I get my order. But I'm going to say, if you use Vistaprint, be very, very careful in how you choose, like, what you're clicking, okay? Just look at the page very carefully before you click anything. That's all I have to say. They're very sneaky. And because they're very sneaky, you probably don't want to use them, okay? The only reason why I'm giving you a warning, actually, you know. I don't know who to choose, but don't use Vistaprint. Is that terrible? They have a good product, but don't use them. Because they're very confusing. So if you're Vistaprint and you're listening to me, you're very confusing and I don't trust you. I don't trust you. So anyway, PodCamp Boston is coming up. I have all my cards ready. I'm going to hand out little magnets to people. So I can't wait. I can't wait. I have cards ready too. I'm going to hand out cards. I'm going to start marketing myself, putting my cards up in different places like sandwich shops and stuff. What I've also been doing to get some buzz for my show, for my audio blog, is I go and respond to other people's blogs and then put my, you know, signature in there, the Flatus Show. And that seems to be bringing people to my blog. So if you're from one of those, if you're listening to this show because of that, hi, welcome! Hi, how you doing? It's nice to reach out and touch people, isn't it? Little Flatus Show family is far and wide. We have listeners from Sweden to Vancouver, Washington, that I know of. That's the stretch. And a couple people in Columbus, Ohio, which is kind of bizarre. And actually, a couple people in Portland. They're actually sort of in different areas of America. They're all over. I'm in the south, the north, the east, the west, in Sweden. Right, Alex? Hi, Alex! Hi, Ricky. Everybody turn to the Atlantic Ocean and sort of wave north to Alex. Hi, Alex! Okay. And so that's that. One thing I want to add is bay leaves, okay? Normally when I buy bay leaves, they're sort of crumbly, I guess. They're very dry. So the other day, Johnny said to me, we are out of bay leaves. You need some. So I go to the market, and all they have is Morton and something or other, some brand I never heard of before. It's in a glass jar. There's maybe 50 bay leaves in there, if that, right? And they're green. They're very green. They're like, they're green. They're very green and pliable. I didn't know they were pliable, but they looked pliable, you know. They're like a rubber tree plant sort of leaves. They're really green, really verdant, live. So I bought them, and I go to the market. I go to the checkout. They're $8. I'm like, well, I need the leaves. I'll buy them, whatever. So we open them up, and you can smell those bay leaves like you – I've never smelled a bay leaf so fragrant. It was – you just, you know – oh, those bay leaves smelled so good, right? So we've been using them in soups and stuff, and they are just so fragrant. Johnny's making pea soup with whole dried peas. And he's making the roux, not the roux, what do you call that? Has the celery, the onions, the carrots, has a name, whatever that is. It's a base in most recipes. It's a French thing, too. What's it called? Garni? No, not bouquet. Not garni bouquet or whatever. Bouquet garni. What is it? Anyway, you take onions and celery and carrots, chop it up finely, and then you saute it in your pan before you add your broth and stuff. And we added the bay leaf, and it hit the oil, and it was just like in your nose, right up in your sinuses. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. The bay leaf was wonderful. So look for good bay leaves. That's all I have to say. I'll never buy that dollar crap again from Brooks Pharmacy. I'm going to buy good spices. And also, if you go, you can get bay leaves at the like Indian market too. And those aren't that good either. They're better than the ones at Brooks. But these bay leaves, look for them. They look fresh. They're so wonderful. On that note, we're going to go on with the show.
Autumn in New York. Why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York. It spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds in canyons of steel. They're making me feel I'm home.
For you, Brenda Starr. Where we last left off, Tina Titan is tied up, and Snovitz and Puffin are going to have Mr. Snuffman, their assassin or whatever, the guy who kills for them, going to have him. They're going to have Mr. Snuffman kill Tina Titan. And she's sitting there tied up, and Mr. Snuffman has a pistol at her head. So Tina says, Men who use guns are compensating for shortages elsewhere. And so the three men, Snovitz, Puffin, and Snuffman, are like, are you insulting our manhood? And she's like, yeah, and also your brains, asshole. So she goes, you had Jack killed, because she believes that he's dead. And Snovitz and Puffin admit to this, that they had Jack Grant shot. So Brenda is outside the room here, right? And she has her cell phone on, and Scotty is on the line. And so she says, "Did you get that? And did you do what I have to? Did you, you know, do what you have to do?" So Scotty has recorded what they said, and has gotten the whole story. So at this point, Snovitz and Puffin tell Snuffman to take Tina out and do what you have to do to get rid of her, and then find Brenda Starr. So at this moment, Brenda Starr comes in. "Well, you don't have to go far, boys. I think I'll help you out. I brought some friends," which are the police, and they're like, "How did this happen? We're movie moguls, you know?" And so they're carted off, and Tina is like, "You saved my life." And Brenda said, "Yeah, but you're about to, you know, trade my life for, you know, something else." And Tina goes on, "But I'm sorry, I can explain." So Brenda gets a call from the St. Nevermore Hospital. And the nurse who's taking care of Jack has said that he's going fast. I mean, he's not going to survive. He's doing really badly. Only a miracle could save him. And he wants to see Brenda. So she rushes to the hospital. And he's in bed. And it's a serious condition. He's wheezing. And crowds are outside the hospital, you know, for him. They have candles. And they're like, you know, vote. They're upset. You know, everybody loves Jack Grant. And he is cute. So Jack wants to apologize to Brenda before he dies. And he says to her, you know, if I had been president, you could have been first lady. And Brenda Starr imagines herself as first lady in Washington. And she goes, well, no, I could have never married you, and you would have never asked. And Jack goes, I'm asking you now. And he's wheezing, I'm asking you now. And she's like, but, you know, don't do this. You know, you're in your deathbed. No, not your deathbed. You'll get well. You'll get well. You're just saying this. So Jack Grant says, I'm sorry, Brenda. I'm sorry I did everything. I tried to play all the different angles to prove how easy it is to manipulate the media, the political system, and the people. And then he says, I apologize. What are you doing? Okay, we'll close the door. So, Johnny just... Jose wants to go out, you know. It ruined my... So anyway, let me get back to this, okay? This is what's wrong. I need my own studio. So Jack Grant says, will you marry me? And Brenda says to him, you don't really mean that. And he says, but you'll understand after I'm gone, the diaries will tell you how much I really felt about you. And at this moment, the EEK, the machines that he's hooked up to, go, eee! And the doctor walks in and says, okay, Brenda, would you like to notify the media? And that's where we're at. I mean, is Jack Grant really dead? Jelly Weekend. Yes, sir, indeed. It's been, let's see. I've been making jelly, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now. We have a grapevine in the yard. And so I was harvesting the grapes originally. Last fall was the first time that I actually did anything with the grapevines, like I pruned them. This year was a very dry summer in Rockport. We had a drought. And the grapes, though, we did water them a little bit. But the grapes are not too big, but they are full of flavor this year. And there was quite a bit of grapes. Thanks to Johnny, we were going to have grape jelly this year. Because I was thinking to myself, oh, well, do I really want to do this? It's a long, hard process. Harvesting the grapes, making it into the juice, and making it into the jelly. And I have since, over the last 2 years, I've cut it into 2 weekends. The first weekend, I harvest the grapes, make the juice. The second weekend, I make the jelly. But Johnny, he was a multitasker. He not only picked the grapes for me, but he was refinishing a piece of furniture at the same time. So, hooray for Johnny. Let's all give Johnny a hand. So I had the grapes. I had what it was. How many grapes did I have? I'll tell you. Imagine a paper bag from the grocery market. It was filled with grapes. Huge amount of grapes. So what I had to do is take the grapes, each grape off of the vine, off of the stem, I guess it is, right? And I washed them. And I have a huge lobster pot. I filled it with the grapes. It was filled. It was a huge lobster pot. I mean, there must have been, I don't know, 5 gallons or 6 gallons of grapes. I mean, I don't know. It was just a huge number of grapes. So what I did is I put the grapes in the pot, added some water, and what did I do then? I turned on the heat, and I brought it to a boil, and I mashed it a little bit gently and let it simmer for about 20 minutes, actually. Then I let it cool, and I did my first strain. Now, last night we were going to a party, a dinner party, at 6 o'clock. I'd started the juice process at 2, so the juice wasn't ready by the time I went to the party. So I had to let it sit. I had put it out on the counter, covered it with a cloth, and let it cool down. When I came home around 11 o'clock, I had to still strain the juice and put it away. So that took me about an hour. And it was the first strain, which is basically taking out the seeds and the skins of the grapes. And so that's with a sieve. You know, I just pour the mixture into a sieve, and I press it through, and I get the grape juice. So I had that.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
I saved it in what I did actually ended up having was, you know, those 3-liter bottles of soda? Well, I went and bought a couple bottles. We don't drink 3-liter. We don't have 3-liter bottles of soda in our house. I didn't have any bottles of soda in my house, so I went to the market and I got the cheapest bottles of soda I could find, emptied them, and I filled up 2 3-liter bottles completely, and then about 3/4 of a 1/3 one. So I had a lot more juice than I ever expected. So this morning, Sunday, I woke up, and what I had to do is strain that juice through a jelly bag, because there was these tiny little particles of, it's not dirt, it's from the stem, and like if there are a little bit of stems left when I was making the juice, but it's from the skin, you know. And so you strain that juice through a jelly bag, and I use flour sack cloth, and you get a really clear grape juice. I mean, it's like makes the best jelly and grape juice. I'm sure you have to do that if you're making wine too. So I had to do that. I strained the juice. It took 4 or 5 turns because I had you can only strain so much with a piece of cloth. You have to hang it. It takes a while. And I sort of poke it and prod it, and the juice comes out. Then you have to clean out the cloth, and it's like baby shit inside. It's so disgusting. But it's all worth it because it makes a really fine grape juice, let me tell you, straining it. So I strained the grape juice, and I put it away into containers that held about 4 cups of grape juice. And there is in the freezer now. So the next week I will make the grape juice. So kids, guess how many 4-cup containers of grape juice I have. And let me just tell you that each 4-cup container, right, is going to make about 8 ounce jars of jelly. So how many do you think I have? How many containers of juice do I think I have? Well, I'll tell you, because I can't. I just have to tell you. I have 9 containers of juice. So I will have, what's that, 72? Can I even do the math? 8 times 9, whatever that is. That is the most jelly that I have ever made. Last year, I think I made 36 jars, which was unprecedented. So each year, it gets better and better. So I'll be sending some jelly out to some friends of mine. And if you're interested in a jar of jelly, email me and I'll send it to you. But, you know, you'll have to send me something like a segment, a 10-minute segment, audio segment for the Flatus Show. And I'll be glad to send you a jar of jelly since I'll have plenty of it left over. So there you go. Jelly. It's jelly time. So next week I'll make the jelly and I'll do a cooking segment on it.
This is Kenty, and you're listening to The Flatus Show. Right, Jose? Oh, he's sleeping.
Oh, little Audrey says, save for rainy days. She says, but every time it rains, she spends what she puts away. She knows her proverbs A to Z and knows the good they bring.
But when she has to follow them,
well, that's another thing. Oh, little Audrey says, while the sun is out, make hay. Though she's not immense, there's a lot of sense in what little Audrey has to say.
Once upon a time, little Audrey got lost on a desert island. Along came a big bunch of cannibals and kidnapped her. They tied her up to a tree and started their pot to boiling. Little Audrey knew they were going to make stew out of her, so she looked around at those lean, hungry cannibals and counted them. They were 19. Little Audrey just laughed and laughed, 'cause she knew she was not big enough to make enough stew to go around.
It was last fall after I harvested the grapes that I started to do some pruning on the grapevines. Now, grapevines apparently have to be cut back to, like, I don't know what you call them. There's this picture of it. There's, like, the stalk, this vine, big, thick vine comes out of the ground. And you're supposed to leave something. Like, you're supposed to cut them back really far. But I didn't do that. But what I did do is I did cut out a bunch of the old cane, I think it is. It's the vines that the grapes grow on. I think they use it for, like, decorative things in, like, if you look at, like, Williamsburg stuff, they use the grape vines to make baskets and things like that. It's very, very, very durable. So I was in the yard cleaning out the vineyard and getting that ready. It was a fall cleanup. This man comes into the yard and goes to my neighbor's house, my neighbor's unit. So I'm standing there and he is not getting anywhere because my neighbor's not home. So he comes off the porch and he goes, excuse me, do you live here? I'm like, yeah, I live on the second unit. And he goes, well, how many people live here? And I was thinking he's some sort of insurance salesman or whatever. Hold on, let Jose out.
Come on, Jose, come on. Stop being a nudge. Don't let the door hit you on your ass. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. So,
Okay, so the guy I thought was an insurance salesman or magazine salesman. I didn't know what he was. And he was a pleasant-looking man. I talked to Joe G about this. So if you go back and listen to my second interview with Joe G, and we talk about this. Because he said, was he hot? I'm like, no, he wasn't hot, but he wasn't bad-looking. So I find out his name is Doug, and he's a Jehovah's Witness. So he's like, do you mind if I talk to you for a minute? I'm like, it's like, you know, the people need to learn geography in China. No, I'm only kidding. So I'm there cleaning up the vineyard, and I'm very open-minded. I was sort of interested in what he had to say. So he starts telling a spiel about, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses, and I think he asked me if I had any, you know, we started talking about religion and the Bible and stuff like that. You know, that's one of my top topics. So I'm cleaning out the vineyard. And at that time, I had started reading the Bible in 90 days. And so I told him, I said, well, to be perfectly, you know, I am interested in religion, I said. I told him where I'm from, what my background is from. And I said, I am reading the Bible from front to cover in 90 days. And I said, you can do this with this, you know, there's a Bible out there that it's partitioned in such a way that if you read it 12 pages every day, you read the entire Bible in 90 days. And so he was impressed, and he goes, why are you doing that? And I told him, I said, well, because I want to is basically the answer. I did want to. I really always wanted to read the Bible. I mean, it seems it's such an imposing piece of literature. And the evangelicals have sort of made it their own and don't let it's sort of like it's mine and no one else can touch it. We're the only ones who can interpret it. That's sort of that's the kind of impression I get from fundamentalists. Like they're the only ones. They have total control over the Bible and what it has to say and any kind of quote that comes from the Bible. So it was I want to read it. I want to find out exactly what it says. Because I know in my heart of hearts is that what evangelical fundamentalists have to say in some things that they say is wrong. One thing which I have known in my heart of hearts since I was baptized, actually, it's ironic, I was baptized, and that's when I realized that I don't believe that Christ is God. I don't believe in the Trinity. And having read the Bible in 90 days, I don't see any viable argument that the Trinity exists. There's God and there's Jesus, there's the Holy Spirit. They're not, like, the Holy Spirit is God, it's just God's actions, I guess. I don't know. It's God, okay? But it's not a separate being. And Christ is God's Son, but not God, okay?
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
People could argue, and this is where I have a problem. The Bible, the New Testament, if you read the first three books of the New Testament, first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they jibe with where the Old Testament left off. You can see this continuity. However, when we start getting into John, and especially the Paul letters to Paul, that's where the theology goes wrong. And if you read those texts in relation to the Old Testament, right, you can see very plainly that it's wrong. It doesn't jibe with the earlier part of the Bible. You could say, well, where's your arguments or whatever? And I guess I could give them to you. But I have to. Well, you know, the thing is, I don't have my arguments all together right now. So that's pretty piss poor, isn't it? Right? My plan is actually to read the Bible again in 90 days. And I'm waiting for the winter time. Because I take the train. And it's a good time for me to read. Right? When it's inclement weather. So I am going to reread the Bible in 90 days again. And actually, I was emailing, not really talking, to Steve Webb, and I said, well, I also want to read it in relation to a concordance. I don't know what you call them. Like one of these books that explain the Bible. Not because I think I need that, but I want to understand the arguments, the theological arguments for Orthodox Christianity before I really say anything more. This, of course, is coming from my assertion that there's just God, first of all, is, Judaism, right, is monotheistic, right? There's just one God. And so when you come to the part where Jesus is God, that's the problem, because it's like a totally different thing. If you read the Paul letters, it just doesn't make sense. Just doesn't make sense. And you could say, there's a quote in the Bible saying something, all scripture is God breathed, or whether, or it's fine. But you have to take just because it's in the canon doesn't mean it's right, okay? People are too blind to think that the Bible is completely right. Okay, in the Old Testament, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, those books are like so strange compared to the rest of the Old Testament. It's like they don't belong, really don't belong. I don't understand how they even fit in there. Doesn't make sense to me. And just like everything from John onwards, all those Paul letters don't make sense. Paul is egomaniacal, you know? He's... How can you even trust Paul? I mean, really, you know? If it's your life, if you're going to trust Paul I don't know. But anyway, that's my thing. And I said to the Jehovah's Witness, we're back to Doug, the Jehovah's Witness. I said, I agree with you in that, in the monotheism, in a Unitarian, you know, aspect. I said, I'm Unitarian. So he gave me this book to read. He was out there for 45 minutes
talking to me.
Pardon me. He was talking to me for 45 minutes. And so he gave me this book and he said, you know, you want to read it? And I said, yeah, fine, I'll read it. And I still have the book in my briefcase. So he said, can I come back? And I was like, no, Doug, no, you can't come back. But thank you for the book. I do want to read it. Thank you. So he said, okay, whatever. Whatever, Mary, as the whatever Jehovah's Witness would say. I'm translating it into the gay. Whatever, Mary. So yeah, whatever Mary turned out to this is turned out to this situation, which I'll tell you. I'm in Washington State visiting my good friend Randy and Andy and engineer Emma and the whole gang out there. And Doug comes back to the house and John is here. And he answers the door and goes, is Ken here? And John goes, no, he's out. And so Doug walked away with his tail between his legs. So just the other day, I'm in my room and John's in the living room. And there's this knock at the door. John looks down and he goes, he yells to me, your religious friends are at the door. So I got up and I went down, and there was Doug with a woman whose name I fail to remember.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
And so they were saying, well, how was it reading the Bible in 90 days? And I told them, and I said, and they kept on saying, what they wanted me to believe was they kept on urging me to think about the book as being prophetic and that there is a bad world coming. And I said to them, Doug, what I believe is this. God takes care of everybody on earth. And it's part of, you know, what Jesus said to, you know, the birds of the air, God takes care. And that's basically what we have to do, is we have to trust in God. And I can think of this as even being a biological imperative, because it's the sense of trust that things will get done and you'll have food and you'll have a place to rest. Things will get done, you know, in the face of a disaster, things will get done. You'll be comforted. I mean, I believe in God, so I think it's God comforting me, but, you know, for someone who doesn't believe in God, it could be whatever, you know? I also, you know, just because I believe in God, I also believe in humanism, too. I mean, that might sound strange, but I do believe our abilities, you know, we do things. We could do things that, you know, really fuck things up, right? You know, so it works both ways. For me, I try to do things that are right, and in the light of that, God's going to take care of whatever, you know. I'm going to trust that. I'm going to have a sense of trust, a bed of trust. So I told Doug and this woman, I said, that's really boils down to. And then they're talking about government and stuff. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to talk about the government. Because, first of all, God doesn't like governments. It says so clearly. It says so clearly in whatever book of the Old Testament. And they're like, yeah, you're right, you're right. I'm like, yeah, I'm right. And I said, whatever. And that's when I said, whatever happens is going to happen. We have no control over it. I said, global warming could come. We could be blown up by terrorists. Whatever, Mary. Not that I want to see that happen, but, you know, I can heed the warnings of science, right? Try to stop it. But ultimately, whatever happens, happens. Que sera, sera. That doesn't mean I'm blind to it, to these problems, and I don't want to change them. So I told that to Doug, and they're like, I guess I see your position. And I'm like, thank you for coming by. So that was Doug. Jehovah's Witnesses. There is a website called religionfacts.com. Jehovah's Witnesses was founded in 1879 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, by founder Charles Taze Russell, born 1852, and he died 1916. As of 2003, there are 6.4 million practicing members. It's headquartered in Brooklyn, New York, USA. It's not divided into different sects. Their sacred text is the New World Translation of the Scriptures. Other texts include the Watchtower and Awake. It's English. Clergy leaders or elders. Organization, body of elders, supervises a congregation of up to 200 members. About 20 congregations form a circuit. 10 circuits form a district. Highest authority is governing body of elders. Brooklyn headquarters is the highest authority. The meeting place is called Kingdom Hall. There's strict monotheism. Jesus is the Son of God, God's first creation. Now, that's another thing I don't believe. That Jehovah's Witness theology is that Jesus is the Archangel Michael. They don't believe in hell, and I don't believe in hell either. In fact, I don't believe in Satan either. Johnny's... Give me a minute, John. I don't believe in Satan either, because you find out in the Bible that Satan is God's ire. Hold on, I'm going to pause here.
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
I'm back. So, where was I? I was just helping Johnny. He got the trash ready from the kitchen, and he pulled out the bag, and these little flying bugs came out. It's disgusting. So the bag broke, and I had to help him get a new bag. Now, we got these bags. They have drawstrings. They're white bags with yellow drawstrings, and Johnny was just saying, who the hell, what, like, you should have a darker color for the drawstring, because you can't see where to find it, to pull it. Oh. Anyway, probably somebody's trying to save money to make an extra dollar for somebody from some rich CEO. Okay, so where am I going here? Oh, yeah, so they believe Jesus is my Archangel Michael or something like that. What else do they believe? Oh, they don't believe in hell, which I don't believe in hell. Oh, yeah, Satan is God's ire. You have to look at Chronicles and Kings. Look at the passage in Chronicles and look at the mirrored passage in Kings, and you'll see that when they talk about Satan, it's really God's ire. And doesn't that make sense that God's ire is when God is angry, right? That's when things go bad. That's and people blame it on Satan when things go bad. Or it's not Satan, though. There's no personage Satan. It is God's ire. See, that's the kind of theology which I don't. You know, you have to read the book literally. See, I'm the Reformation baby. I really take Protestantism to the fullest extent. I mean, that's what Unitarians are. The most far-flung far-flung Christians are the Unitarians, because we have denied the authority and hierarchy of the Catholic Church, who, first of all, that was the one that was controlling everything, right? But even more so in the other Protestant religions, who still cling to the theory of the Trinity. If you read the Bible clearly, that theology is wrong. You don't need it. People are still afraid. You know, they're still afraid to step away. But I am sure, but you have to discover that for yourself. So if you're interested in that, read the Bible in 90 days. Don't say it on my word. You know, you have to have your own personal experience about why that's.
Special features from theflatishow.com. Jose and I invite you to come to theflatishow.com and sign up.
a hospital on the east side, a dying patient gives a last expiring gasp. He's gone. Slipped through my fingers like water running through a sieve.
It's not your fault, Dr. Grant. You've done everything you could. The hospital's certainly not failed.
Nurse, this man should never have died. Something's wrong. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure that James Towner here did not die of the ailment he came to this hospital for. Nurse, I'm going to get permission to perform an autopsy.
Your hunch was right, Dr. Grant.
What is it? Tell me, Jones.
When we tested Towner's blood in the lab, a foreign substance showed up immediately. I didn't recognize it, but one of my assistants seemed to think he knew what it was. So I let him make tests. A rare poison used only by the South American Indians was introduced into the bloodstream of the victim. It killed him, all right.
But that's impossible, Dr. Grant.
Jones, did your man say whether this poison could have been taken through food or...
I thought of that, too. He swears it is the only effective way when it is taken directly into the bloodstream.
And is there any antidote?
Not known. My man says the Indians obtain a certain immunity by injecting themselves with small amounts over a long period of time.
How could that poison have gotten into Towner's bloodstream?
Doctor, I was with the patient every minute he was here. I could swear he had nothing intravenous during the whole time except the transfusions. Two of them, which you ordered yourself.
The transfusions? Who was the donor?
Mr. Harkness, a friend of Towner's, happened to be visiting him. The friend immediately offered him blood. Towner was grateful and accepted. Harkness said something about it being the least he could do. We tested his blood and found it the right type, so we did the transfusion.
I think we ought to investigate Harkness.
But, Dr. Grant, I'm positive that Mr. Harkness did not even touch Mr. Towner during the whole time of his illness.
If what I'm thinking is true, Harkness had something to do with the death of James Towner just the same.
Well, we were certainly lucky, Doctor. There's no question about it. Harkness is your man.
I knew it, I knew it. I've had Harkness investigated by the police. He's mentioned in Towner's will, gets the whole estate. The police have searched his apartment and found just what I expected. I feel my medical judgment has been vindicated, Jonesy.
You're right, Doctor. We're going to have this man Harkness arrested for the murder of James Towner.
Do you know what the doctor and the laboratory technician discovered which indicated to them that Harkness murdered his friend Towner? The doctor will tell you in a moment, but first... Now, back to our story.
Well, Doctor, what have you found?
The thing that indicated to me the fact that Harkness had a hand in the murder of James Towner was something Jones said when he spoke of the poison, and the way the South American Indians gained immunity from it. I deduced that probably, against the chance that his so-called friend would need a transfusion, Harkness had so immunized himself over a period of time. If he had, the poison would still be in his blood in some quantity, small perhaps, but enough to react unfavorably on Towner in his condition. A police search verified my hunch. And now, Harkness is being tried for one of the most unusual murders that has ever come to my attention.
Storm Song by Robert Frost from his collection of poems, A Boy's Will. The line storm clouds fly tattered and swift, the road is forlorn all day, where a myriad snowy quartz stones lift, and the hoof prints vanish away. The roadside flowers, too wet for the bee, expend their bloom in vain. Come over the hills and far with me, and be my love in the rain. The birds have less to say for themselves in the wood world's torn despair than now these numberless years the elves, although they are no less there. All song of the woods is crushed like some wild, easily shattered rose. Come, be my love in the wet woods. Come, where the boughs rain when it blows. There is the gale to urge behind, and bruit our singing down, and the shallow waters aflutter with wind from which to gather your gown. What matter if we go clear to the west and come not through dry shod? For wilding brutes shall wet your breast the rain-fresh goldenrod. Oh, never this whelming east wind swells, but it seems like the sea's return to the ancient lands where it left the shells before the age of the fern. And it seems like the time when, after doubt, our love came back amain. Oh, come forth into the storm and rout, and be my love in the rain.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com. Or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
And now, Harkness is being tried for one of the most unusual murders that has ever come to my attention.